Hello again, kings and queens of the ring. It's Poyo Del Mar. Welcome back to another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. If this is your first time tuning into the podcast, welcome. I am Poyo Del Mar, the first lady of Northern California professional wrestling, a lifelong wrestling fan, as well as an award-winning journalist. Each and every episode, I bring you highlights of what has been going on this week's television product for WWE, Impact Wrestling, and more, as well as exclusive interviews with some of our favorite stars of today and yesterday. I'm excited to be back to you just 2 weeks shy of WrestleMania, without doubt the biggest weekend in sports entertainment each and every year. This year's lineup for WrestleMania is looking to be stellar, and I will give you my arm drag takedown of all that is happening in the world of WWE, SmackDown and Raw, as well as over on Impact Wrestling, before bringing you my in-depth personal interview with independent wrestling superstar Mike Pero. Mike recently came out in an issue of the Gay Star News, an East Coast LGBTQ publication, as being a gay professional wrestler. And over WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans, he will face off for the Evolve Heavyweight Championship. Mike will be on to talk to us about the coming out process, his love for professional wrestling, how he feels that he is being handled in the world of professional wrestling as an out gay man, and much, much more. In addition to that, I have a big announcement, which I will bring to you right after this break when we return with more Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. To never miss an action-packed, interview-laden episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, follow us on social media. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. All right, listeners, welcome back to this episode of Arm Drag Takedown. And before I dive into the updates on what has been going on my television in the world of sports entertainment, let me bring you the big news that I am so excited to announce to each and every one of you this week on this episode. If you are a regular listener of Arm Drag Takedown, you are aware that my favorite online news board for the world of professional wrestling is WrestleZone.com. WrestleZone.com seems to be the most dependable in terms of breaking new news, as well as providing valuable opinions, as well as perspective on the industry of professional wrestling. Over the years, as I was a contributor to the Huffington Post covering professional wrestling, WrestleZone often reported on my work and were one of the few news boards that actually credited my work to me by name as a professional wrestling journalist. I've always attributed that idea to the concept that many news boards were not comfortable with the idea of a drag queen covering the world of professional wrestling. It's a boys' club, and I'm a boy who dresses as a girl. So, without question, I've always thought that that made some people in the world of professional wrestling a little bit uncomfortable. However, WrestleZone always fell outside of that and respectfully gave credit where it was due for my interviews with some of the top stars in the industry today, including past interviews on this podcast, including Charlotte Flair, Austin Aries, reigning NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, Tyrus, and many, many more. As of this week, I officially, I'm happy to announce, have signed on as a regular featured contributor on the site. I will be joining WrestleZone as soon as this week. So by the time you are listening to this, within 24 hours, my first feature on WrestleZone should be available. It is a detailed description of why I feel Austin Aries is what is best for business in Impact Wrestling and why he is the ideal champion at this point in the company's history. Go over to WrestleZone.com to check that out. Meanwhile, thank you to Nick Houseman, the executive editor at WrestleZone, and the entire WrestleZone staff for welcoming me on. I look forward to big, bright things coming in the future, including interviews that are conducted right here on this podcast popping up on WrestleZone in the future. Hopefully, there'll be a great deal of cross-promotional opportunities as not only I build out this podcast, but my content for WrestleZone, and ideally, as I increase my profile as a personality in the Northern California world of independent professional wrestling. Thank you to WrestleZone. Thank you to the readers who have supported me there over the years. I look forward to building our relationship as things move forward. And thank you to the listeners who have made it possible for me to secure some of the tremendous interviews that helped me land this position. As a lifelong fan of professional wrestling, writing about professional wrestling is something I have wanted to do since I was 8 years old. And in the world now where pro wrestling magazines are not as prominent as they once were, whereas once writing for Pro Wrestling Illustrated was my dream, I feel like I'm getting to live my dream now as a featured contributor on WrestleZone. Thank you, and that is my big news on the personal front. Now let's take a look at what's happening on television in the WWE. Taking front and center on the red brand was a rehash of recent events in two storylines heading into WrestleMania. Fans were first served a repeated beatdown of Roman Reigns at the hands of Universal Champion Brock Lesnar. This rehashed events from the previous week, where a handcuffed Roman Reigns was devastated by the Universal Champion. I'm not sure exactly what this is setting up other than an underdog storyline for Roman Reigns heading into WrestleMania. I know that the idea behind it is to establish Brock as a dominant heel, allowing fans to cheer Roman at the greatest stage of them all. However, if audience response is any indication, currently fans are enjoying Reigns being beaten down at the hands of Brock Lesnar, so I'm not certain that WWE is receiving the payoff that they're expecting from this. I was excited because of the fact that it kept Roman Reigns from being on my television screen for the majority of the show, and I did not have to hear him speak, not even once. Brock Lesnar looks strong. Reigns takes a beating like a champ. We will see where this leads heading into WrestleMania weekend. Also on the standstill front, it was John Cena facing off against Kane in the main event as Cena calls for The Undertaker to come out of his self-imposed retirement and face him for one more match at WrestleMania. The Dead Man no-showed yet again as Cena picked up a victory over Kane, his brother in destruction, as we headed to the close of this show. Now, whether or not Cena gets to face Undertaker at WrestleMania, and of course, it's obvious that he probably will, this has been an interesting development for Cena as he calls for Undertaker to come out for one more match. Nobody in the history of the company has done anything the likes of calling The Undertaker a coward, and here is Cena doing exactly that. I'm not certain that this is the best bet for putting Cena over as the big face in this, or whether or not they're planning to make Undertaker the face. Either way, it's going to be two fan favorites facing off against one another in New Orleans if this comes to fruition. Fans seem to be anxious for the return of Undertaker, and I'm certain that we will get a last-minute development next week on the take-home show heading into WrestleMania weekend. One significant advance in storyline on the show was, of course, the involvement of Ronda Rousey, the newest member of the Raw roster, in her in-ring confrontation with Absolution. Paige came out to do the talking for the group, goading Ronda Rousey, as well as offering her a spot as the fourth member of Absolution, which Rousey declined quite handily. This led to a physical altercation between Rousey and members of Absolution, winding up with Rousey putting Mandy Rose in an armbar as Kurt Angle begged her not to break her arm before going into WrestleMania. Now, this puts over Rousey very powerfully as she leads into her feud with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H at WrestleMania, the mixed tag team match, which will also see Kurt Angle, the Hall of Famer, involved. It also did well to make sure that Rousey, who is still obviously not very skilled on the microphone, had to do a limited amount of talking, letting her physicality do the speaking for her. It's a good build into this, especially following a very nice recorded promo package from Stephanie and Triple H as they put over the fact that they are, in fact, both athletes and owners of WWE. making certain that they don't go into this confrontation with a renowned physical athlete, the likes of Ronda Rousey, with Stephanie appearing like a complete and total underdog. It did well to put over the feud. It did well to put over Stephanie and Triple H as physical competitors. And I look forward to seeing how this develops in the coming week before we head into the big payoff on April 8th. Rousey wasn't the only woman to take front and center on this week's Raw. The angle between WWE Raw Women's Champion Alexa Bliss and her WrestleMania opponent, former best friend Nia Jax, is reaching a boiling point. I've really enjoyed the development of this storyline as Nia plays a sympathetic role as opposed to the monster heel that they've built her as so often over the years. Nia is now the victim of bullying and mental tactics from the prettier, smaller, allegedly prettier, definitely smaller, Alexa Bliss, as Alexa has been using Nia as her tool to maintain her championship. I look forward to this match at WrestleMania, and in my perfect world, Nia will claim her first Raw Women's Championship in New Orleans. While that certainly does not encapsulate all that happened on the 3 hours of Raw, let's, instead of focusing on that, turn our attention to big happenings over on the Blue Brand. SmackDown, of course, is headlined by the return of Daniel Bryan to the active roster, or at least the imminent return of Daniel Bryan to the active roster, as he has finally been cleared after 2 years for in-ring competition. Of course, we knew all of this going into this week's SmackDown. After last week, Shane McMahon was brutally attacked at the hands of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, who laid out the SmackDown commissioner and then turned their attention to a physical assault on Daniel Bryan. They powerbombed him on the ring apron moments after he fired both competitors for their assault. This week, things further amped up as their feud leads into a WrestleMania return for Daniel Bryan, as he will team with Shane McMahon, taking on Sami and Kevin, with the winning team having huge stakes. If, in fact, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are able to win, they will be reinstated to the SmackDown roster. But if Bryan and McMahon are victorious in this match, Owens and Zayn will remain unemployed. Now, it is impossible to imagine how it would be that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn would be fired from WWE. They are two of the biggest names on the roster, and quite clearly, most everything that's happening on this show revolves in some capacity around the two of them. That leaves to question not if, but how they will come out victorious as we head into WrestleMania. Equally in question is Shane McMahon's ability physically to compete in this match, considering all indications show that he was actually hospitalized after last week's SmackDown episode. Whether those injuries were actually accumulated as a result of this, or they were somehow incorporated in storyline based on other real-life indicators and factors, we don't know. However, the reality remains that Shane McMahon is unlikely to be in top or peak physical condition in just 2 weeks. My smart money says that somehow, some way, Daniel Bryan may end up aligned with Owens and Zayn. That is where the storyline has been leading us up until this point. Whether that comes to pass or not, I am not certain. However, undoubtedly, this will be one of the highlights coming out of this year's WrestleMania. In a somewhat surprise turn, Rusev punched his ticket to WrestleMania as he faced off against U.S. champion Randy Orton and the glorious Bobby Roode with his tag team partner Jinder Mahal. Now, as you might be aware, Jinder Mahal, Roode, and Orton will be facing off, or were scheduled to face off, in a triple threat match for the U.S. Championship at WrestleMania. However, after picking up a surprising victory, Rusev petitioned Daniel Bryan and found his way into a fatal four-way match for the belt. Over the last 6 to 8 months, Rusev has built a following of fans that rivals anyone in the top ranks of WWE at the moment. The fans are absolutely crazy for Rusev, and their chants of Rusev Day are deafening. While I've greatly enjoyed his pairing with Aiden English and hope it does continue, nobody deserves a second shot at success on a solo front quite like Rusev at this moment. I look forward to the match happening at WrestleMania, and I would not doubt or I would not be completely shocked if Rusev walked out of New Orleans as the newly crowned United States champion. Things in the SmackDown Tag Team title division continue to heat up as we head towards the triple threat match for the belts currently held by the Usos. It will be the Usos facing off against New Day and the Bludgeon Brothers with the tag team titles on the line. This week on SmackDown, we saw New Day face the Bludgeon Brothers in what turned out to be an all-out brawl with the match being thrown out. It continues to hype the confrontation between the three teams, and I, for one, am excited to see the addition of the Bludgeon Brothers into the tag team title scene. Over the past year or more, the Usos and the New Day have had a lock on this division, Uso Penitentiary and all that, but it has gotten a little bit stale despite the fact that they have put on some absolute clinics as tag teams go. The Bludgeon Brothers add some new blood to this, and I'm hoping that we will see something new and interesting added to the division in the wake after WrestleMania. To hype the first ever Women's Battle Royal at WrestleMania, Becky Lynch upended Ruby Riott. I'm a little disappointed to see Ruby Riott picking up so many losses of late. The faction came in so strong, so dominant, and then quickly has fallen to the wayside in terms of their dominance of the women's division on SmackDown. However, this could bode well for Becky Lynch, the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion, who, if anybody on this roster needs a victory, it's probably her. Becky has fallen into the shadow deeply of Charlotte Flair as well as others on the roster of late. And I think a victory coming out of WrestleMania would do well to reinvigorate her. She's not my personal choice, but it could be what the WWE sees as best for her character and best to reinvigorate a popular staple member of the WWE women's roster. Finally, leading into the main event, it was Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Shelton Benjamin. With Benjamin's tag team partner Chad Gable at ringside, Shinsuke asked AJ Styles to accompany him to the ring as well. Of course, it goes without saying that Shinsuke picked up a hard-earned victory in this match, only to turn the match into psychological warfare for AJ Styles, who he told later afterwards that he didn't need him at ringside. He wanted him at ringside to see what is looming ahead at WrestleMania. This will be a dream match between the two competitors, and there is no clear-cut face and heel going into it, which is highly unusual in the world of WWE. Instead, we get two accomplished, revered professional wrestlers facing off in what many are considering a dream match at the grandest scale. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura are absolutely certain to put on match of the night come April 8th. People will be looking forward to this one and have been for quite some time now. We will get to see it play out. Personally, I hope that Shinsuke does not win this belt. I like Shinsuke. I love his in-ring performance. I think he's obviously electrifying with his ring entrance, but it is very difficult to imagine a competitor unable to communicate fully in English carrying the championship as we come out of the biggest night of the year. We will now turn our attention to the most recent episode of Impact Wrestling on Pop. And rather than focus entirely on the in-ring action, much of it which I seem to have forgotten in the last week, instead I will comment on how difficult it was for me to enjoy this show with Sanjay Dutt and Josh Matthews on commentary. Josh and Sanjay worked extremely well a couple weeks ago when Sanjay made his debut as a commentator. I spoke highly of Sanjay's performance on that particular episode, and I was optimistic that things would bode well for the future. This week, unfortunately, proved how little this team is working for me as a viewer. When it came to selling matches, the enthusiasm that this team lacked was palpable, and when Josh Matthews left the commentary to go into the ring for his already awkward pairing with Matt Sydal, where it was revealed that he is the new grand champion slash X Division champion, Matt Sydal's spiritual guru, during which Matt Sydal handed Josh Matthews the grand championship, which, to my understanding, the grand championship is the second biggest belt in the entire company. Why would you give it away? It makes no sense. Neither does the pairing of Josh Matthews and Matt Sydal at this point. Hopefully more will be revealed around that. However, during this segment, Sanjay's inability to carry excitement, enthusiasm, and tell a story in the commentary booth became clear and evident. It was uncomfortable to watch. It was difficult to listen to. And I hope that the hires up at Impact also took note of this. I'm not pushing to have Sanjay lose his position on the commentary team, but this is a scenario wherein a third party would do very, very well to be added. I think it could do wonders, perhaps, if Jimmy Jacobs, who seems quite comfortable on a microphone, has great inflection and seems to be able to convey a story quite well through spoken promos, joined the commentary team. That's only one option among many. What would it be like if perhaps a female was added? I know that they've got Gail Kim on the roster, and she could be somebody who proved quite valuable in a capacity such as this as well. These are all things that Impact will need to work out because their commentary right now is lagging significantly behind the in-ring action. Austin Aries, as the Impact World Heavyweight Champion, has reinvigorated the division as well as the top tier of competitors within the company, as I will detail more wholly in my first ever feature article on WrestleZone as a WrestleZone contributor. Look for that this week on WrestleZone.com. However, if the commentary team stays as lackluster as it proved to be this week, I found it difficult to focus on anything I was watching, and it was exceedingly easy for me to zone out entirely during the matches, though the quality of the competition and the stories that they're actually telling right now are quite good. It falls on the shoulders of the commentary team to actually hype the audiences for what is going on in the ring, to tell the stories, to keep the energy level up. And there were several times, especially when Josh and Sanjay were backstage talking about the brutal attack last week on Eddie Edwards, that it sounded more like they were speaking a very sad eulogy than advancing a story through credible commentary and enthusiastic. The storytelling just really sadly lagged, and I don't want to harp on it too much. This week's Impact in terms of in-ring action was rather good. In terms of the overall television product, I found it extremely difficult to stay focused and to be interested. That lies exclusively on the commentary team. Anyone from Impact should be listening to this. Please take a look at your commentary team and see who might better be able to carry your product as it moves forward at this very important juncture in the company's history. Two other quick notes about what we saw on Impact this week. We finally got the reemergence of Abyss as he faced off against Kongo Kong. Kongo Kong upended Abyss in a Monsters Ball match, claiming the title of the new Impact Wrestling Monster. It felt a little bit like this match lagged. It seems that Abyss as a character might have lost a little bit of steam. I would really highly approve of seeing these two paired up as partners rather than opposition. I think that they would be a great addition to the tag team division, which is lagging a bit right now. And I think that they could tell a great story as a combo. Either way, I am a big fan of Kongo Kong. I look forward to seeing what is ahead for him, and I'm happy to see him move forward in stories. On the other hand, something that I thought was poorly done was the debut of Sue Young. We are only weeks away from Laurel Van Ness, the previously crazed bride in Impact Wrestling, departing the company. So to have a new bride-type character, the deranged bride, Sue Young, debut, first and foremost, is a little bit questionable. They're too close in gimmick. But further, her debut seemed to be absolutely throwaway in the midst of a flailing angle between Braxton Sutter and Knockouts champion Ali. Inserting Soo Young in this angle seems like a complete waste of an interesting character, a talented performer, and weighing her down with a storyline that has well exceeded its expiration date and is lagging in fan interest is just poor business. You could practically hear crickets chirping upon her debut. And referencing back to the poor commentary this week, neither Dutt nor Matthews did much to sell Soo Young as a credible contender going forward. Yes, I recognize her, that's Soo Young. They would have been far better served to have this creepy, insane-looking character come into the ring and beat Ali down, setting up for a reveal of who she might be next week, rather than giving away her identity, which is not widely known to many fans, this week, and then strapping her with an already failing story between Braxton and Ali. It was poorly done. Soo Young, I think you deserve better, and I hope that going forward, you will emerge from this as a viable contender for the Knockouts Championship and get the opportunity to shine as your gimmick and your talents provide you without being immersed in an angle that seems to be on its absolute last legs for about the third time over. All right, listeners, that was our arm drag takedown of our favorite televised wrestling products. When we come back, we will have with us our exclusive interview with Evolve Wrestling star Mike Pero. In a recent interview with the Gay Star News, an LGBT publication based on the East Coast, Mike came out and shared his story of being an openly gay professional wrestler. At the upcoming events of WrestleMania weekend, Mike will challenge for the Evolve Heavyweight Championship, and I'll also talk to him about his role in an upcoming independent documentary film called Out in the Ring, a documentary focusing on LGBTQ members of the professional wrestling industry. I should also note that I am featured in that documentary as well. All of that and more when we return to this episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Never miss an action-packed episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Follow the podcast on social media. You can find us at ADT with PDM. On Facebook and Twitter, that's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar.
WWE superstar Charlotte Flair, and you are listening to Arm Drag Takedown.
Woo! Well, first of all, thank you for joining me, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast to talk about your experience as a professional wrestler. And of course, given the unique nature of my particular pro wrestling podcast, as an out gay man as well, because you are the first out wrestler that we've had on the podcast.
Oh, well, I'm the first?
You are the first out wrestler that I've had on this particular podcast, yes.
Oh, well, thank you for the honor, I guess.
Before we actually talk about your career in wrestling, I'm very curious how making your sexuality known so publicly last year has changed things for you in the industry and personally.
In the industry, I wouldn't say it changed much because I had actually started coming out about 4 years ago, and it was my coworkers, the boys in the back, that encouraged me to actually do the article. One of my good friends, Martin Stone, he goes by Danny Burch in NXT. When the Gay Star magazine, David Hudson, reached out to me, I was a little bit hesitant about doing the article. And I asked him, like, what should I do? And he was like, you need to tell people. Your story's important. It's different. He goes, you said it yourself. Growing up, you had no role models. You had nobody like you to look up to. So he said, do the article. We all support you. And at the time, I'm still working for MLW for Court Bauer and Evolve for Gabe Sapolsky, and I approached both them, and I said, hey, should I do the article? Because you never know how it's going to turn out after it hits. I actually didn't think it was going to be as big as it was.
Right.
Honestly, I literally, even when David was doing the interview, it was 15 minutes, he seemed non-thrilled. We did it over Skype, and I was like, I even told my fiance, I was like, yeah, he's totally not going to print this article. And I thought he was bored, and he wrote the article, and it had millions of reshares worldwide and an influx of crazy amount of support and letters and messages of even a lot worse straight community. They send me letters, stories of friends, or how do they talk to their friend about it. It's been crazy, but inside wrestling, nothing has really changed for me because I already had their support. They had already known, I'd already kind of come out to them, and it was kind of like everybody knew. After it, everybody has shown me support. Now, in my actual life, that is not work related. It's been a little weird because I never thought to myself I'd be talking about it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Something that I hid for so long, I thought I'd always be talking about sports or everything else I've always done. To be openly talking about issues is a little new to me. Because I do say things that sometimes that are not the social norm in the gay community, and it tends to upset a lot of the gay community sometimes because I say things that need to be said rather than I said in my story, not everything was great. You know, I didn't have a great experience trying to come out. It was really hard for me. One, because I never grew up with gay friends. You know, the only gay people I had known are my buddy's girlfriend's friend, and he's obviously super flamboyant, and that's the only gay I had known. I didn't know it was just like the straight world where everybody's different. You know, there's tons of different personalities and types. Those are just the ones that stand out to you, but it doesn't mean that's the one you know. But I didn't know that at the time, so I was a bit lost. So I tend to say things that aren't really acceptable. Like when I told people that I was masculine shamed, the gay world lost their mind. It didn't happen. I'm like, like the comments, oh, it must have been so hard for you. Try being feminine. I'm like, this isn't a competition. I'm just telling you my story and what happened to me. And reading some of the comments, I'm like, wow, I just, because when I started to come out, I had a lot of people tell me, hey, you need to be more gay if you want to be accepted in the gay world. And I'm like, well, why can't I just be me?
Right.
That was my major question. I'm like, when I came out, my main thing was, I don't want to change who I am. I just want people to know all of me now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I can understand both sides of the coin. I happen to be pretty empathetic to people and their experiences. And what I will tell you is that, and I'm not defending the commentary that was given to you because I don't think it's helpful, and that's number one. But there is a very different struggle for somebody who has gone their entire life being shamed and emasculated. And
but that's what I'm saying is, like, I'm not putting them down.
No,
I believe they did. Like, I actually give them. They had the courage to do something I didn't have the courage to do. But they only read the one part and skipped over the part where I said that. And that's what I was saying is, like, we're too easy to jump on each other rather than support each other. I wasn't taking them down. I was just saying, and that's the other thing. I didn't say who was masculine shaming me. It was just all of a sudden this bombardment of people being like, oh, it must have been so hard for you. And I'm like, no, it's hard for everybody. I would never wish, it sounds terrible, but I don't wish the coming out experience. I wish people didn't have to come out because it's really hard. I don't think people that aren't gay actually can ever get a grip of what it really is, how it feels, the fear, everything you go through, everything it does to you mentally, and it's hard for them to understand. But I get what you're saying is, like, you know, everybody has a different story. And my fiance, you know, he had to move out of his house and live with his grandmother because of it when he was in high school.
Right.
Because he came out.
I mean, I really think that what the core of the problem here is that you're addressing is that I think that people often get really trapped in whatever their own life experience is. And because individual life experiences can be very traumatic or very troubling, very challenging, if people get so obsessed with what their own story is and have an inability to understand that somebody else's struggle could look different, but it doesn't make it more or less difficult. I will tell you this, as a person who was shamed from the time I was very young about being too flamboyant, too feminine, too gay, whatever, people were telling me I was gay before I was ready to even acknowledge that for myself. And that's a struggle that is pretty horrible. And I think a lot of gay men in particular, and I'm sure lesbians on the reverse side of that, that they're not feminine enough or they're too masculine or whatever might be the case. But I think that that is something that probably when they look at, if they had a preference between being able to sort of like fly under the radar, like you're talking about, versus their own experience, they'd probably choose yours. But it doesn't negate the fact that there's an entirely different set of challenges when you have to tell people something that they would never have suspected probably on their own. I mean, that's a real challenge unto itself because it's not even a possibility in the minds of most. Whereas for me, when I came out and said, by the way, you're right, I'm gay, people were like, oh, thank God, you got that, you know, like, let's clear the elephant out of the room and just move on.
Like I said, I didn't want to be gay. I tried everything not to be gay.
Yeah, you went through, by choice, something that the gay community has been rallying against for years, and that's conversion therapy. And I was wondering what it is like on the inside or from the inside of conversion therapy, because I've literally only known a few people who've done it. They were usually forced by family members or others, and they were truly traumatized by the experience. So as a person who went into it rather willingly, what was that experience like?
So to understand why I would choose to do that is, first let me explain. This is my personal experience. I can't tell you whether it works or doesn't work. I didn't finish it. I removed myself from the situation. But I did actively choose this because I was having such a hard time trying to be gay. I couldn't meet guys. Guys were very mean to me. They told me I was fat and ugly, you know, like trying to use all the apps. Like I literally tried to make the choice. Like, I'm going to try to do this because, like, I've always known I'm gay. There was never a question in my mind whether I was gay or not. It was just, I didn't want to be gay. You know, I grew up very Catholic. I went to Catholic school my whole life. And when somebody gives you an option and you're having such a negative experience and there's option, whether it's fake or not fake, people take it. It's just the placebo effect, I think, in my head. So I found this place, and I'm going to say this. Yes, a lot of people were there. I was one of the oldest people there. I went there, and one of their problems is the philosophy that they have, that gay is a choice, that you're choosing to do this, that you just have to work harder to like girls. And I was like, dating girls is like, that was the first thing I said, because I'm very, I say things when people, like, I don't understand them, like, I'll say them out loud. And, you know, I'm very outspoken when it comes to certain things like that. Plus, I'm 6'4", 300 pounds, so I kind of stand out.
Right.
And I was like, listen, dating girls isn't the problem. I've dated tons of them. I want to like them. I want to have the same feelings my friends does. How do you make that happen?
Right, absolutely.
I want to make that happen. And they're like, well, that is a thing. This is a, you have to just work harder. You need to pray. You need to do all this. And I'm like, first, praying isn't a magical wish. I don't know where people get this concept that prayer is a magical wish, but prayer is a conversation with you and God. That's what I was always taught. God isn't a magical being that grants you wishes.
And a genie. God is not a genie, folks. Just a spoiler alert, God is not a genie.
Exactly. Like I just didn't understand that concept. But it was funny. Just, I'll give you an example. One of the things is you go, you have dinner with somebody that had completed the course, okay? And then they sit down and they talk to you and tell you how great everything is once you complete the course. And, you know, he has this girlfriend and all this stuff. And I'm sitting, and no offense, but I'm sitting there and I'm like, this guy is so gay. It hurts.
Yeah.
Like, it's hurting me to watch him talk to me. I'm like, bro, nobody in this thing thinks you're straight. I even said it at the table. I go, listen, man, nothing for nothing, but nobody at this table thinks you're straight. And he got mad at me. And he's like, no, I'm in love. I'm like, okay, man. I'm like, but those are some of the things that I was just like, wow. After a while, I was like, listen, this isn't working. And I left. But I will say, it was the first time in my life that I felt not alone. It was the first time I actually got to hear people that has the same feelings I do towards men. Before that, I had nobody to talk to. I didn't have a gay friend, and it's not like you can go to your straight friends and go, hey, guys, yeah, you know, Sarah's great, but, you know, have you seen Jimmy? Amazing. Like, no, nobody else? No? Okay, cool. Just walk but over here.
I really feel that the problem with the idea of the mentality that gay is a choice, it negates the fact that almost entirely across the board, there are those of us who are gay, who spent a significant amount of our time in our life before coming out and coming to terms with who we are, wishing and praying and hoping and trying to do the other. And that is the thing. I will tell you, I was gay as the day is long. And throughout college, I had a series of gorgeous girlfriends, like beautiful, that, I mean, for anybody who's listening who happens to be straight, get a gay friend. Gorgeous women flock to them. And when they can't have the person that they're interested in, which is usually the gay guy, you might stand a chance because you are at least in. So, but I mean, I had a series of gorgeous girlfriends, and now, ironically, about 3 days a week, I dress like just like one of them. I look just like her. She was stunning. I'm gorgeous. You know, but but the fact is, like, if I could have prayed this away or if I could have just wished hard enough, it would have been gone. And it's obviously something that people fail to understand. It's an emotional connection. That's what you were looking for, an emotional connection, that kind of thing where you feel invested in and you long for and you want to be with another person. And I think that some people, maybe they're straight and they've never actually experienced that same thing for themselves, so they don't know the difference. If you're only looking at it from a sexual perspective, it is not that. That fails to acknowledge the deeper emotional connection, which really defines romantic love for between people.
And plus, there's so much misconception out there about being gay. I grew up playing sports, so it is a very boys kind of locker room, you know, very masculine. And you grow up, and I know I'm gay, okay? And I have no sports role models to look up to. Everybody on TV is super flamboyant. So if you're a guy like me, you're like, okay, well, this is apparently the only thing gay people are. I guess there's nobody like me. I'm this weird, weird outlier that there's nobody like me at all, because TV doesn't portray that. And that was one of the major reasons why my friends were telling me to do it. They're like, you keep saying you have no role models, that kids are like you. They're like, show people that it's a spectrum. It's not, everybody has a different personality. We're people. It's not just, not everybody's will and grace, you know?
Right, absolutely.
And the problem is, we have a tendency to, like, not everything on TV is will and grace and Drag Race. You know, those are both really good shows, but there's other people. Like, I was listening to an interview the other day from Alan Cumming, and he's playing a CIA guy that wrote a book, and there's a mass murderer, and he's, like, finding them, but he's openly gay, they don't hide that he's gay. They just show he has a husband, a stable life, and all that. And I'm like, there needs to be more of that on TV, showing that there is stable relationships. There is, like, not everybody's this. There's this, too. You know, because there is a whole spectrum of people that want to see that. And I think a lot of times, even example, during the Winter Olympics, who did they focus on the most? Who did TV focus on the most during the Winter Olympics?
I can't even remember his name, but I know who you're talking about. I don't watch the Winter Olympics.
They lost their mind for the figure skater because he's over the top and he's funny, but at the same time, it's like nobody focused on Gus. They attacked Gus because Gus kissed his boyfriend. So wait, you guys are all supportive because when the guy is funny and he makes you laugh, but when the guy had broke his arm, his boyfriend kissed him at the end of the thing. Great moment. Didn't say anything. No sassy comment. No, this is witchcraft. Just kissed his boyfriend. Everybody lost their mind saying that's wrong. But you were okay when the other guy was making you laugh. So that's my major problem with how television focuses on it. They focus on stereotypes. My main thing with being a professional wrestler is I'm not a stereotype. Even when I told the two companies that I work for, I'm like, hey, I'm openly gay. So if you don't want to go ahead with the storyline, they're like, listen, man, this is you. You like to throw people into walls. You're physical. You're a badass. And he goes, if you grinding, doing the stereotypical grinding up on a dude, just ain't gonna work for you. I was like, yeah, that's not gonna work for me. So they decided to actually go with this. They didn't hide that I was gay either. So, you know, that I like. I'd like to see more of that on television. Does that make sense?
Well, of course. You know, I've recognized for years that, and I really do think that what we're talking about here, though, is the progression of how any minority group sees themselves represented on television. First and foremost, I want to put it out there that I have no problem being the sassy gay one-liner, but that is not for everybody.
I'm not saying that's wrong either.
Of course not. Like, but I happen to specialize in the sassy gay zinger, and that's fine. But what we see in the representation of all minorities on television is whether that is African Americans being some kind of stereotypical ghetto representation or a funny sidekick throughout the 70s and then coming into their own a little bit more in the 80s with the Cosby Show showing more of, you know, like a life that most Caucasian people would never be able to imagine for themselves, like the doctor and the lawyer, mom and dad and the great family or whatever. But we see that representation grow over time. And we are starting to now see that within the LGBTQ community with shows like the one that you're talking about with Alan Cumming and more things where they just acknowledge a person's sexuality and move it forward. And one of the things that you're talking about, very specific to yourself, is something that I talked about when I was recently interviewed. Well, actually, we were both interviewed for Out in the Ring, an upcoming documentary film that's going to be focusing on queer individuals in the professional wrestling industry. And I said to them, my hope is that professional wrestling at some point will reach that tipping point wherein a person's sexuality is not the focal point. It's something that may be acknowledged and then you just move on. It's assumed, for example, that every heterosexual wrestler in the industry probably has a wife or a girlfriend and maybe some kids or whatever at home. But that doesn't define who and what they do, who they are and what they do in the ring any more than if a professional wrestler is known to be gay or lesbian, that person might have a loving partner at home and then they just move on with their career. You know, like it's acknowledged, perhaps it may be mentioned occasionally if that person's partner might be in the audience or whatever, but it's not the focal point of their story and it's not the focal point of an angle. And if it is the focal point of an angle, perhaps it could be dealt with in a way that is much more interesting than, oh, they're gay, so they're weird. They're gay, so people are freaked out by them. They're gay, so they have a psychological advantage if they touch their opponent, whatever the case may be. We've seen that for years, and I've actually always loved it. I loved when Gold Dust as a character freaked people out. but I don't think that I would have liked that as much if Goldust had actually been a gay wrestler and been seen and portrayed as an oddity.
Well, exactly. I agree with you on that. It's like, but I also say, like, with the question is, like, a lot of the questions I get, well, people are like, well, you know, it's easier now. It's easier now coming out. And I'm like, no, it's not easier. Because you still have people in sports that are terrified to come out because of contracts, or they're not going to get signed, or all this kind of stuff. Example, 2 weeks ago in the NFL Combine, once again, an NFL team asked a player if he's dating a man. What does that have anything to do with this situation? How does that affect his play on the field? It doesn't. And, you know, you just said that. It's like, we expect straight people to have boyfriends, girlfriends, and all these other things. But for a gay man or anything like that, you have to ask him.
Does it make him run slower if he's got a boyfriend? Does it make him less likely to catch a ball?
That's my question. So if he said, yes, he has a boyfriend, are you not going to draft him high? Are you not going to pay him the same as somebody else? Because people a lot of times don't treat LGBT issues as discrimination.
Right.
Because we usually use it as a color. But what they don't understand, LGBT, there's certain restaurants where people can deny us service.
Absolutely.
This is still a major issue around the world, and let alone in America. We have a vice president who has been pretty outspoken about LGBT community.
Outspoken? Yeah. Passed legislation?
Like, exactly.
That goes a little beyond outspoken. It's not like, it's not a tweet.
This is what I say. It's
an active
fear of ours.
Yes.
That our rights can be taken away tomorrow. Everything that we fought for are taken away tomorrow. But the more people are outspoken and they come out and they talk about it, because what I've learned is a lot of people aren't very hateful. They just don't understand. And nobody, we need to open an open conversation. I had said that the other day. What I find is people are way more curious, especially with my straight friends. They are so curious because the information that's out there is extremely limited. We don't teach sexual education in high schools. And if we do, it's heterosexual. They don't teach any homosexual. It doesn't exist. They don't even mention it. And you're like, no, this obviously exists. Like, it's like, back to the word that it's a choice. There's millions upon millions of gay people around the world. That's a lot of people making one choice. Making the same choice. No, it's biological. And
clearly,
you know, say that we're different is weird, because the number is more. And people, somebody said it to me, they're like, somebody made a comment when I came out, what, is everybody gay? No, just people are not afraid to come out anymore. They want to tell you who they are. Wouldn't you rather your friend, I said this to a friend of mine, would you rather know the real person or know the fake person the whole life?
So, Mike, there is a saying that I have lived by for many years. I would rather be hated for who I am than adored for who I'm not. And the fact of the matter is, when you feel like you are not authentic in who you are, it does not matter how much praise, success, or adoration is heaped upon you. There is something internal for any person who has any element of integrity that recognizes that if a person knew the reality, their response to you might be different, and it becomes fear, and it manifests itself through self-sabotage and self-hatred, depression, and other things, all of which I know you've experienced because I read your story. And the fact of the matter becomes that even if 90% of the people in your life fall away when they find out what is really going on and who you really are, that makes the 10% that remain that much more valuable, because they are the people who know the whole story and are still with you, ride or die. And that's what it comes down to.
That's what happened to me, you know. And I didn't really have people, per se, abandon me. I had people step away just because they didn't know how to deal with it. And I think a lot of times we like, I like to tell people when they're coming out, remember, especially when you're coming out to your family, parents have a weird way of planning your life the moment you're born.
Before you're born?
Yeah.
From the moment you're conceived.
They plan your wedding, they plan If you're a girl, they plan your wedding. If you're a boy, they plan how many grandkids you're going to give them. You know, what you're going to do, what job you're going to do, what college you're going to go to. So when you tell them and you ruin their fantasy, you have to be aware that it took you a long time to come to grips with it. Give them a moment. Because
right.
A lot of times I feel people overreact and flip out on both sides. And I always say, the burden of being gay is we always have to worry about other people's feelings. Never our own. We always have to worry about everybody else's, how they perceive it. Hopefully one day we will get past that point. But right now, we're really in the middle of that point. We really have to always worry about how people deal with us, something in our bedroom that has no effect on their life whatsoever, but they feel the need to have to tell us. And those are the things that we deal with in the gay community that people don't really see, you know, especially as it, the different spectrums. Like, you know, I know the people that make our gear, my gear, he is a drag queen. Awesome gear, by the way.
By the way, drag queens had the best pro wrestling costumes ever, because that's exactly what I have in mind 90% of the time when I'm...
And it doesn't break, and if it does, they fix it for free. So best gear people are drag queens. Best gear people ever. So I just want to put it out there. But I see it the way people like when you were in costume, people just stare. And it, you know, you're used to it, but like, come on, people. You get what it is. It's a performance. So it's just those things.
Which,
you know, it's a wild ride.
Which, oddly enough, is one of the reasons why after I became actively involved in the world of professional wrestling, after the first time, maybe second time I was in a dressing room, and I felt out of place, you know, it was internalized, I felt uncomfortable because I was aware I was gay and the drag queen in the room with a bunch of professional wrestlers. After maybe the second time, it was almost a non-point because, as I've said more than once in various interviews, I had Katarina Waters on a couple episodes back, and I told her, I was like, you know, I recognized right away, like, I'm no more a woman when I'm dressed up than the guy locally who is a lobster. There's a guy who wrestles as a lobster. We are all something. We are all something portraying a character for the entertainment of an audience. And people got over that really quickly in the world of professional wrestling, backstage, behind the scenes, because I think that we're aware that all of us are there for the entertainment of the crowd. I think audiences might have a little bit of a different perspective, but I found it to be very embracing, to be honest, much more so than I thought.
What I have actually found about audiences, and it was this was actually probably the most shocking part to me. So I literally thought different areas of the country are going to have different ideas about me. Do you know what I mean? Since the article broke.
Right.
I was totally wrong. Not only have I, the wrestling community as fans have been awesome. I was in Texas this week, middle of nowhere, Texas, Rockdale, Texas, okay? I don't know where all these people came from because the show was literally the Knights of Columbus, and surrounding the Knights of Columbus was farm fields and cows. There's no people, just farm fields and cows. Even pulling up to the venue, I was like, I don't know if there's going to be people here tonight, but, you know, hey, let's see what happens. It was packed. And huge lines of people coming up and shaking my hand and saying, you did the right thing. I'm proud of you. These are people that you wouldn't ever in a million years think they would say that. But that's the cool thing about wrestling. Because wrestling, it literally is for everyone. Because it's the only thing in life that it can be, you know, for everyone. You can be poor, you can be rich, and sit next to each other and yell at the same bad guy. Or cheer the same good guy. And it doesn't matter who you are or what you are, you're watching the same thing. That was the coolest thing to me, the experiences I've had, especially with fans, of just coming up and wanting to take pictures and tell me they're proud of me and tell me they support me and I did the right thing. And that wowed me a lot. Like, there's a lot of things that humble me, especially the letters and the comments. But when fans come up to me at shows, that I wouldn't expect to come up to me and be like, hey, you did the right thing. I was like, thank you. Or I had a guy come up to me. He's like, my son came out to me because of your article.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an honor.
Yeah. And he's like, can you take a picture with us? And I was like, yeah. I was like, totally. I've had wrestlers come up to me and ask me, how do I talk to my friend? I know he's gay and he's going through a really hard time. How do I address him? How do I talk to him? How do I tell them I'm there for him, that I know that I don't care? Because I think he thinks I care that I'm not. And I'm like, and this is multiple people that have done this since the thing. Things that I didn't think would happen. You know, I thought I would tell the story. And because I told the story around the same time as Anthony, there's Sunny Kiss out there, there's Effie. You know, there's a lot of people that are out there already.
Absolutely. You know? All of whom I love. All of whom I've interviewed.
Yeah, and they're all like, they're all good friends of mine. And people, like, it's just, when you hear messages of people saying they came out because of your article, it made them not scared. It makes everything worth it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things in my own life, and I, you know, this goes across the board from sexuality to struggling with depression, or in my case, struggling with addiction. When you are open and honest and share your truth, what it encourages other people to do is allow themselves to feel vulnerable as well, because they're encouraged when they look at a situation that is difficult for somebody and say, if this person can do it and overcome, maybe I can try it too. And I think that that's why it's important to tell our stories. Now, I'm curious, you mentioned, or you touched upon earlier, the way the professional wrestling organizations that you are currently working with have handled your sexuality. How has it been handled by those organizations in storyline? Has it been made a focal point? How has it been dealt with in terms of the wrestling product?
So this is a two thing, because this is the number one question I get asked from a lot of podcasts. About 2 years ago, WWE had mentioned that they were going to do LGBT storylines, and that did never happen. It never materialized.
It did not.
No, it did not. One, maybe because, you know, the families with the administration and the administration's values play a big role in a lot of things you do, but that's everything. Politics plays a lot in everything you do. So, you know, and it's the time and the place and what's right and what's wrong. Now, have they hired people? Yes, they've hired people. But has there been an open storyline? No, there hasn't been.
They also did not have, to their defense, Darren Young is not the character I would have necessarily wanted that storyline to revolve around anyway, because I like him. He's athletic. I think he's way hot. But he does not have a personality that would carry a storyline like that. You know, people were not invested.
Well, and that's the thing. That's, I also touch on that. That it has to be the right story and the right person. Do you know what I mean? It's something that can't be rushed. Because the last time they did it, it broke a lot of people's hearts. It broke my heart. You know, Chuck and Billy broke my heart. Like, I will say that. You know, and I have said that to numerous people. That was the first time that, as a closeted male, watching it and being like, wow, they're really going to get married on TV. This is a real thing. This is awesome. Even though I know it's a story, I was like, okay, this is good. And then they just pull the rug out from under, and I'm like, oh, so we're a joke. Sweet. And that's how I felt. And I actually talked to Billy about that, you know, how I felt. You know, and a lot of people felt that way, you know, because it was treated like, I'm not gay. That's gross. You know, that's how they treated it right afterwards. And I'm like, so you were only pretending to be gay, and then when it came down to like a really cool storyline, you're like, ooh, that's gross. That's how I perceived it.
Yeah, I think that I would love to see them do a storyline that portrays the gay character in a sympathetic way, where he has the unrequited crush on a straight guy, and the guy's not a bad guy necessarily because he's not interested. He's just not gay. Or allow the gay character to be somebody that is very well-liked, express a crush, and then have the heel defame him by bullying him, by calling him names, whatever, and allow the audience to be sympathetic to the experience because, aw, he just likes you. You know what I mean? Like, leave him alone type of thing.
Or you make the bully and them actually together the whole time, and you make them bad guys. There's ways to do it. It's very hard. It's one of those subjects that is very touchy that they don't want to, and I understand. So how we do it in the companies I work for, we don't hide the fact that I'm gay. In fact, they've talked about the story in both commentaries, but I'm still a badass because that's what I'm good at.
Right.
So it makes it that much better. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think the fans get into it more because this is the first time they've ever seen a gay man that isn't weaker than the straight guy.
Right.
You have to remember, a lot of the gay characters that are portrayed are more comical or more perceived as weaker than their opponent.
Right. I mean, you present the opportunity because of how you are physically and how you are in the ring to be parallel to if at this point in time it was revealed that Braun Strowman is gay. And people would lose their mind because they would not know what to do with that information because he's beaten the ass of every single person on the roster. You know what I mean?
And that's what I do. And then it's funny to see their reaction because it, especially as, you know, rowdier crowds, they let the other guy have it. And it's not negative, but they do let the other guy have it. That's how they treat me. It's not how they treat every gay character. It's just how they treat me. You know, they don't hide the fact that I'm gay. It is not hidden at all. They talk about it on commentary, but it's not like I have a boyfriend or a love interest on the show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, we've done some things where the girl tries to grind up on me. You know, that ain't going to work. You know, like,
right.
Ever popular, like, try to get my attention, and then I'll just powerbomb her. Like, the old school way. Like, so it's like, everybody's like, oh, intergender wrestling. I'm like, I didn't wrestle her. I'm like, she jumped in the ring, I powerbombed her. You know, she's a worker, she's a wrestler. You know, that's the other thing. I love people that argue in wrestling about all the different things, and the only thing that limits you in wrestling is your imagination. If your imagination sucks, that's what limits you. Anything can happen in wrestling. Like you said, there's a lobster. Okay. You know.
Right. So I work for Wrestling for Charity here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and our promotion, I would never put us on par with any of the, like, bigger local promotions. We are clearly doing this to raise money for great causes. We use wrestlers and workers from every promotion in Northern California, and we do it for the love of what we're doing and for the love of philanthropy, which to me is the best possible combination because those are the things that I love. But, you know, one of the things that we always do is that we have a little bit of everything. We have our standard big guy badass. We have our monster heels. We have all of this stuff. But one of the things that the audience loses their mind over is this lobster guy. He has a red cape and he'll, like, lay down on the mat with his red cape over him, and the other wrestlers, air quotes here, can't see him because he blends in with the mat, and they trip over him and shit. The audience loses their fucking mind.
I did comedy for 7 years. My first character I ever played was a 5-year-old. I'm a big fan of, like, Shakara, and I'm a huge fan of Joey Ryan.
Oh, my God, yeah, absolutely. Best gimmick in the industry.
Joey has revolutionized what sports entertainment can be, you know, and I've told him this multiple times. He is a unique individual that is able to capitalize on fun. He capitalizes on fun. There's only a few guys that are, like, the kings of fun, like Colt Cabana.
Yeah.
You know, those are fun wrestlers, you know. Look at this. The coolest faction in wrestling, the Bullet Club, had a guy in a bear outfit for weeks.
He's not still in the bear outfit? I just watched a recent video.
No, it was revealed that it was Kenny Omega.
Oh, okay.
But
spoiler alert, listeners. Spoiler alert. Shit, I didn't know that.
Weeks ago that happened. So if you haven't watched it yet, I apologize.
Yeah, but, whatever. I mean,
you
know,
listen, wrestling can be anything. And the fact that people get so upset when it's just not two guys doing stuff. You know, I'm like, it's fun. Everybody's there to have fun. This is the only time where you can go somewhere and just lose yourself. There's no outside in. You don't bring your baggage to the wrestling.
Right.
Have fun. Lose yourself. We want you to yell. We want you to cheer. We want you to lose your mind. You know, have fun. It's a show, you know, and it's like we get so caught up sometimes on what it has to be. Like yesterday, the comments about Matt Hardy and the total deletion. Like, some fans losing their mind. Like, it wasn't as good as TNA's. I'm like, okay, what? It's a different product. It's a different concept.
It's a different company. I mean,
exactly. But that's. I think sometimes fans want to be so much part of the action. They want to be the booker, the promoter, and everything too. And realize this is how I. But you know what? I will say this: it's like every sport, the Monday morning quarterback.
Of course,
I wouldn't have called that play on the goal line. But no, you would have never got the chance because. You're not a football coach. You know, like, you've never been in those situations before. You've never been in the Super Bowl, you know. But wrestling, out of everything, I think, especially with social media and Twitter and that, fans feel way more connected to wrestling than they do anything else.
Well, come on. Mike, I don't know about that because you're talking to a drag queen, and go on social media. Every person who's 12 years old, who's never, ever done drag, is going to critique every girl in drag. I mean, I'm, you know, my friends who've been on the show are like, if I get one more 15-year-old, tell me, like, what's wrong with me?
It's funny as they forget that it's a show, too. Funny story. I'm getting over it, but I have an irrational fear of drag queens.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
This sounds terrible, but... this is why I'm afraid of drag queens. I don't like clowns.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, I associate them in my mind, but they're giant clowns. They're, like, bigger than me. Because most drag queens, in their heels, are big people.
I'm taller than you when I'm... Yeah.
And they're over the top. And they'll call you out. It's like drag queens can sense... the one person that doesn't want to be there, and then they find them.
You're talking about me right now, because I survey the audience.
It's an uncanny sense. It's never the people that want to be on stage. It's always the people that doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, I have that sixth sense, and I will, in fact, and I make it a point, I find the person who is least comfortable and make them part of the show.
Well, I'm telling you now, that's the drag queen superpower. It's like, for some, they just know. And for the longest time, they terrified me. Now, I'm actually kind of getting over it due to the fact that some of my biggest supporters are drag queens.
Yeah, I believe
it. It's like, you know, and they're funny. You know, I will say this, drag queens are very witty and funny. You know, they're very quick-witted. And as an entertainer myself, you know, you appreciate what you do and how long it takes to get ready and all the stuff. But I will tell you this, if I was ever a judge on Drag Race, I'd be the meanest judge. You're basically doing lip sync battle. And so give me something. I don't know. Fireworks, something.
All right. You need to stop right now because I'm going to send you to remedial drag race school. You have to at least watch one episode fully all the way through before I even have this conversation with you. So,
my fiance has watched the show.
I believe that.
I've never really watched a full episode. Of course, through social media and Twitter, because you are right. For the amount of people that apparently drag race is like pro wrestling. Apparently, people don't watch it, but it's the two number one rated shows on television. You're like, okay, so who's watching? You just leaving it on at your house? My tag team partner, him and his wife, just started watching it, and they fucking love it. They're like, this is hilarious, this show. And I'm like, what? I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, me and my wife love the show. And I was like, oh, do you?
Well, today, just today, earlier before this phone call, this is an announcement to the listeners as well as other people, perhaps. Very soon, I'll become a regular contributor to WrestleZone.com, which is my personal favorite wrestling news board. And they've always been very supportive of my work, and they're one of the few boards out there that actually acknowledge me by name when they've shared my interviews in the past. They've always linked to my stuff. They acknowledge me as a person, which is so nice because I'm sure, as you are aware, when you are a person like myself, a drag queen who is also a skilled and award-winning journalist, very knowledgeable about wrestling, not getting acknowledged is a slap in the face. It's like, okay, so clearly this is about what I do and who I am, not what I'm capable of. But anyway,
because you're clearly using my word, so you might as well give me credit.
Exactly right. So anyway, I'll be joining WrestleZone as a regular contributor in the very near future, and the executive editor of WrestleZone emailed me this morning and said, by the way, my girlfriend is very excited that you're joining our staff because she is obsessed with drag queens and is obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. So, yeah, the appeal of Drag Race, I think that when people think about that, they're like, oh, drag queens equals gay people. I'm like, no, no more so than Real Housewives of Atlanta equals black people. It appeals to people who like reality television. It appeals to people who like drama on television, whatever. I mean, it's just like wrestling. There's something for everyone, kind of. I mean, if you open your mind up to it and watch it, if you want to be entertained, you can be entertained, period. End of discussion. It's like, really, we're in the entertainment business. And as long as what we're putting out is entertaining, we're doing our job.
Exactly. And what I say is there's like, the cool thing about the show, there really isn't an agenda. It's a show.
The appeal for me of drag, one of the hugest ones, is honestly stems from my lifelong love for wrestling, is I get to be this crazy, over-the-top character. I get to wear my wild costumes. I get to do all this stuff. And I don't think it's any different than any person who's ever loved any number of ridiculous or colorful or vibrant characters in the world of professional wrestling. I think that there's such a strong tie to that, you know? And if you are willing to suspend your disbelief when you are watching what I do, just like you would if you were watching pro wrestling, you can enjoy my performance just as much as you can somebody else's. And of course, I get to do it now within the realm of wrestling as well, so it makes it even better for me.
I think one of the most addicting feelings is being in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
I think, or on stage. Or
right.
It's that. Like people always say, pro wrestling is a drug. Because I remember my sister saying, she goes, I wish you were. I'd rather sometimes think it'd be easier if you were an actual drug addict. Because being an independent wrestler is very hard, and I went through a lot of struggles professionally. You know, it's very hard. There's a lot of ups. There's a lot of downs. But it's just keep going forward is one of the hardest things to do sometimes. And that's why I always say pro wrestling is a drug, because a lot of times you're like, I'm done with it. And then 3 days later, you're like, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. So it's addicting.
It is. And I can relate to that on many levels, and I can understand it fully, but it's the idea of going in front of an audience, and this can take in many facets, it's the idea of being a struggling artist, really. And wrestling is its own art form. And, you know, we love what we do. And when we are in front of an audience that appreciates us, whether that's 5,000 people or 50 people, and sometimes even less, depending on where you're working, you still get that thing that reinforces positively why we're doing it. We get that positive feedback. We get that kind of adrenaline rush. We love it. And I think that that's really a common thread for all people who are entertainers in any form.
Yeah, it's a crazy experience. So I'll actually ask you a question on your own podcast.
Sure.
What drove you to wrestling?
To love it or to pursue it?
Both.
Well, what drove me to pursue it was the fact that I had loved it since I was very young. Like about a year ago, I wrote an article on the Huffington Post called How I Grappled with Internalized Homophobia to Live My Pro Wrestling Dreams. And what it described in that article and my experience was that because of the messaging that society had given me, you were given the messaging, for example, that gay people are not like you because you were masculine and you were interested in sports and athletics, and that is not what gay people do. Well, I received the same messaging in a very different way, which was I was effeminate and I was a sissy or whatever the terminology that somebody else applied to me. And yet I still loved wrestling, but wrestling would not love someone like me. So that was the messaging I received, and I believed it. I think that that's a problem that a lot of us encounter in our lives. We receive negative messaging, and we believe it when there's no actual proof of it. Or maybe there's some proof, but not 100% proof. Well, over time, I decided that I didn't give a shit whether or not wrestling as a whole might accept me. What I wanted to know is that regardless of the outcome, that I had tried to do something I'd loved. I wanted to go to wrestling school as a young boy. I lived in Florida at the time, and I rode off and received information to Boris Malenko's wrestling school in Tampa, Florida. And I attended all of the Florida Championship wrestling shows that were throughout the area that I lived in Ocala, Florida. I was very interested in that, but I was off put by the idea that I would not be able to succeed because of who I am. So I put that dream aside for years. And then when I became an adult, I started writing professionally as a journalist. And ultimately, one of the things that I went back to was another childhood dream, which was writing about professional wrestling. As a kid, I wanted to write for Professional Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and obviously that never happened. But I could now access top names in the professional wrestling world. I could do great interviews. I could do great write-ups. And through that, it introduced me more and more into the world of wrestling. And eventually, an organization here in Northern California offered me the opportunity to come down and do some kind of guest spot where I was like a ring girl or something like that, or a bell, the timekeeper. And I decided to do that. And after that first time of doing it, which was just a little over a year ago, they started offering me more and more opportunities because they recognized that I'm good on a microphone, or I got a great response from the audience and all of this stuff. And that's how I fell into it. In terms of how I got involved in it initially, my family presented wrestling to me as an option of their idea of something that could be considered masculine, because as a kid, we went through everything. We tried baseball and karate and the Cub Scouts and all this shit that basically just didn't stick for me. None of it was a personality fit. But the first time I turned on pro wrestling with my grandfather, I was hooked. And now we're like pushing 40 years later, and I'm still hooked. Love it.
It's like we each have our like little story. Like I'll tell mine. Like growing up, my grandparents—they weren't really my grandparents; they were my next door neighbors, but they were raised as my grandparents my whole life. And I'm from upstate New York. And my grandmother's mother was from the Ukraine. And when she got here, when she immigrated here, they told her she had to be more American. She had to like the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Yankees, and professional wrestling. That would make her more American. And she absolutely loved professional wrestling. Just wild about it. So every Sunday we'd watch the Dallas Cowboys and professional wrestling. Ironically, my favorite football team is the Dallas Cowboys, and I love professional wrestling. So that was my first introduction to wrestling. My first ever wrestling match, my dad brought me to the Royal Rumble in Albany, New York. So that was my first actual live experience. I remember being enamored, being like, these are larger-than-life superstars. And even to this day, I still WWE does an amazing job of making their wrestlers superstars.
Absolutely, clearly.
Out of anything they do the best, they do an amazing job of making their guys, their men and their women look like mega stars, like big budget movie stars, and that's something they do very, very well. And it was one of the reasons why I actually didn't think I could be a professional wrestler. I was like, wow, these are superstars, you know. You have like John Cena and all these guys, The Rock, Stone Cold. Well, one of the coolest experiences was I was front row for the beer truck for Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a moment in time.
Yeah, I was there for the formation of the second DX of Billy Gunn and all that. You know, The Rock's first ever people's eyebrow. I was there. You know, Albany, New York had a lot of cool experience for wrestling, and I got into wrestling because in college I would force my football team to watch wrestling all the time, just all the time. I always had it on. I was either doing that or reading Mick Foley's books or Chris Jericho's books in college. You know, I always had a biography because that was the time where everybody was having biographies come out.
Right.
The early 2000s, everybody had a book, which was great because I'd read them and the trips to the games. And then finally, I always say this, he'll probably not remember, but starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, Tyler Thigpen, he had come back and we were out at a bar and he's like, he knew I wasn't happy what I was doing after college. You know, he goes, why don't you try wrestling? I go, I didn't get a degree in wrestling. He's like, I didn't get a degree in quarterbacking. You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. So I looked up the best school because I'm one of those people that, like, do their research before I jump into things. And Bubba and Devon had opened a school in Kissimmee, Florida, and out of all of them, seemed to be the best option. And they'll hate me for saying this, but I actually chose them because I didn't want to learn from people like a Shawn Michaels or somebody. Somebody that is super talented. You know, I want to know somebody that wasn't started as super talented, but earned their way to the top. I want to know, because I'm new to myself, I'm not athletically gifted like everybody else. So how did two guys that are basically not as athletically gifted as everybody else get to be two Hall of Famers?
Right.
So
they are going to hate you, but I totally understand exactly what you're saying.
But I want to know how they got from ECW where to main eventing WrestleMania. You know what I mean? I want to know how they got from point A to point B. Because if you look at point A, they weren't that good. But if you look at point B, you're like, wow, these guys are amazing. How did they get there? So I wanted to learn from them. And let me tell you, if you want a pro wrestling education from going to like Harvard, those are the two men to learn from. You get two different perspectives on what pro wrestling is, and you get psychology that is far beyond what is taught at most wrestling schools. And I'm not putting down any other wrestling schools because there's tons of wrestling schools, but I'm very biased to the one I went to, and they're honest to you. When you go to pro wrestling school, some pro wrestling schools be like, 6 months, I'll have you get a WWE tryout. I have Hunter on the phone right now. You know, Paul, you know, he calls me. You know, a lot of I've seen multiple wrestling schools tell their students that, I'm talking to people over at WWE. They're very interested in you. But, you know, you're going to have to do this. No, Bubba, the first day is like, 98% of you won't make it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, sweet. He told me I was terrible from day one. But I like people like that. I like you. They're very good at motivating you to be better.
Right.
They expect success out of you. They tell you this isn't fantasy camp. If you want to go to fantasy camp, there's other schools. But they want to teach you. You know what I mean? And they're hard. You know, I went for a year before I was ever allowed to do any of the indies, to even go to an independent show. I was there for a year. I went from 11 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night every day for a year. before Bubba even freed me. And he freed me just because he got tired of me. He's like, just do it. So, and he liked my comedy character. So that's how I got started in wrestling. You know, 9 years later, it's a little bit different. But that, they actually did say, like, one day it's all going to click and you'll get better. And it happened. You get more confidence, if that makes sense.
Of course. You know what you're doing. It's like learning a foreign language. You learn words, and then, I mean, come on. It's that scene from Helen Keller where Annie Sullivan puts her hand in the water. All of a sudden, it clicked. It made sense to her.
And it did.
Then they couldn't shut that bitch up.
And then the bitch could talk.
Yeah, exactly.
It was amazing.
No, Mike, so, I really appreciate you joining me and talking today. I really do. It's great. I look forward to seeing your part. I know that they had just spoken to you when I filmed my segment for Out in the Ring.
They're going to be with me actually all WrestleMania weekend down in New Orleans.
Oh, that's what they told me. I'm sorry. I thought that they had just talked to you
they have just talked to me, but they're going to be with me that day and go through my title match for Evolve.
That's awesome. So, I can't wait.
That was cleared, and I'm going to be at all Evolve events WrestleMania weekend. So if anybody is listening and they want to come see me and they're making the trip, come to all the WWN live events WrestleMania weekend. They're all crazy between the Evolve. If you haven't ever seen Progress, it's crazy. I've never seen British people have songs for everything. They sing songs for their wrestlers. Joey Janela's Spring Break is the biggest shit show of a wrestling show you'll probably ever see, but it's probably one of the funnest. I blame Beach Balls on Joey Janela. So if anybody ever in wrestling, you want to blame the Beach Ball, blame Joey Janela. That's the guy that pretty much started the Beach Ball thing at WrestleMania.
They've been banned this WrestleMania.
So, yeah, I doubt they're going to let Beach Balls in this WrestleMania.
They outright said that they're banned. Beach Balls are banned.
They've banned Beach Balls?
Yeah, they released a statement.
Oh, well, listen, people are creative. Maybe they'll bring inflatable sharks.
I don't know. I mean, I can tell you this. I've got some mad talents. I could smuggle a beach ball in there.
I bet people are going to smuggle some beach balls in. You know, it's wrestling. Wrestling fans are like we've been talking about, a unique breed of people that I wouldn't trade for the world. But they find ways to do things that you would never ever think possible.
And so does the world of professional wrestling, which is why it's a perfect match.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I wish you the best of luck. I look forward to seeing your future as it starts to unfold. And it's great that while you did not grow up having a role model in the industry, that you are now able to be one for other people. Finally, I'm sure that after our conversation, many of the listeners out there will have questions or comments to direct to you. How is it best for listeners and fans to reach you?
The easiest way for me to answer questions is Twitter, because it's quicker. It's right there. I see it. So if you ever want to hit me up on Twitter, it's Paro, P's and Paul, ARROW _. And that's the easiest way for you to get a quick comment from me. Even if you hate me, just give me a quick comment.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'll make sure that everybody goes to at Paro, P-A-R-R-O-W _ on Twitter to be able to interact with you. Thanks for joining me today, and have a great one. That was out independent wrestler Mike Paro. You can catch him wrestling for Evolve on WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans. He will be challenging for the Evolve Championship, as well as filming an upcoming segment for a independent documentary film called Out in the Ring, which also features me. Look for more information on that online, as well as listen for it here on the podcast. You are listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I'll be back right after this to wrap up this long episode. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter.
at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. And to stay up to date on all of the events that are happening in the life of our hostess, Pollo Del Mar, follow her on Twitter at TheGlamazonPDM. TheGlamazonPDM. All right, listeners, if you have managed to make it this far into the podcast, you are officially, basically, the winner of the Royal Rumble. You have outlasted everyone else. So congratulations on your victory this episode. I'd like to let you know to stay tuned. Next episode, I'm going to have 80s icon, the manager of such people as Tully Blanchard, Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair himself. The Perfect 10 Baby Doll will be joining us for an interesting conversation reflecting back on her time as one of the most iconic female superstars of the 1980s. She's worked with every legend in the book, and she shares some incredible, incredible stories about each and every one. You're not going to want to miss her most colorful, we'll say, remembrance of working with Ric Flair at the height of the Four Horsemen's popularity. That and much more will be on next episode of Arm Drag Takedown, which, by the way, will hopefully get written up on WrestleZone. Remember, go over to WrestleZone.com to find my first feature as a contributor to the website. It comes out on Thursday, April 29th at WrestleZone.com. Until next week, I'm Pollo Del Mar, and like this podcast, stick a fork in me. Honey, I am done.